Welcome to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
an ongoing conversation
with ministry leaders
about embracing complexity
and uncertainty
with joy
and faithfulness.
Friends, this is Adam Borneman with the Ministry Collaborative, and I'm excited to have David Zoll back on the podcast today to cover several things, including his work with Mockingbird and some of the things they have coming up. David is the author of two books that I really like. One's called Seculosity, the other is called Low Anthropology, and he's written a bunch of other stuff through Mockingbird and otherwise. So it's always good to chat with him about that and a host of other things. David, it's really good to see you.
Thanks for having me. Love being here.
David, real quick, remind people of where you are and what you're doing there.
Yeah, Adam, I'm here in Charlottesville, Virginia, Central Virginia, where UVA is, broadcasting live from the offices of Christ Episcopal Church, where I serve on staff. But really what I do with most of my time is I run Mockingbird and do writing and all sorts of things for to make that engine go.
David, I thought of you the other night watching the latest season of Curb Your Enthusiasm, and here's why. I want to throw this quote out to you and just get your reaction to it. There's this great scene where Larry David's character, as usual, is in some sort of awkward tension conflict with somebody. And they say, "Larry, I'm going to be honest. I'm disappointed. I was expecting more from you." And he says, "Yeah, I've been expecting more from myself my whole life, and it's just not there."
Oh, it's beautiful.
I heard that, and I thought of a lot of the work you've done and some of the conversations we've had. So I wanted to get you to riff on that a little bit. I know you're a Curb fan, but what else does that make you think of?
Well, it encapsulates one of the great paradoxes of Larry David's work in that it's brilliantly funny and extremely meticulously detailed in its plotting, and yet what the actual content is often about how disappointing human beings are to one another, how transparent our selfishness can be, and how just the abysmal ways we treat each other. So it's this work that's done with care. And in my book, it approaches genius at certain times. And yet it's also incorporates the more base level of our nature. And of course, when you're talking about expectations, that's I think referring to my book, Low Anthropology, which is in large part about how an inflated expectation that we live with of who we can be and who we should be tends to actually create despair and resentment and entitlement rather than a sort of a more sober view estimation, a more Larry David-like anthropology. In practice, it actually exudes connection. A lot of people watch those shows and they think, oh, well, at least I'm not like him, but I've had that thought before. That's what you always hear. Larry says the things everyone's thinking, but there's a sort of a commiseration and I think, again, a lower, and I would call a more sort of Christian view or Augustinian view of human nature really allows for unity and humor and love.
Amen to all of that. And for me, lines like that, which of course, you know, not just in Curb Your Enthusiasm, but in lots of other venues of our culture, lines like that stick with me because it's counterintuitive in a way, because it sounds like a sort of judgmental, cranky way of seeing things. But in some ways, it's very liberating because it names the thing that so many of us experience. And I see it as remarkably gracious just to be able to admit, like, yeah, maybe it's okay that this is all I am. Maybe that's fine. Maybe I shouldn't expect anything else. And even if that's true, that's okay. And like you said, it just runs head on, full speed into the way that we're being shaped by the culture to think about ourselves. And I find it really, like I said, really liberating. One of the reasons I like the work that you've been doing with Mockingbird really over the past several years is that you and other folks who write with Mockingbird get at this kind of thing from lots of different angles pretty consistently. So I'd love to know where that work is going and where you're seeing fruit from it and what you all have been thinking about, you know, theologically and culturally, and just what are you seeing in that work?
Well, thanks for the kind words about the work. I mean, we're seeing traction. Mockingbird's growth could never be referred to as exponential, but the people that love what we're doing get a sense of freedom from it. There's a freedom, I think, that is sometimes communicated through humor, though it's never meant to be funny, but I think that if you're being honest, sometimes that can be funny in a Larry David-like kind of way. But I see, you know, our real refrain is that God is real and God is gracious. And that's the fundamental disposition of God towards sort of people like Larry David and me, there's a hope that I find people are pretty hungry for these days. But they're also hungry for, I would call it, kind of a Christianity that's a tad more vertical, God-directed, not completely occupied with what's going on down here or just the cares and concerns of our neighbors. I mean, those things are unbelievably important, but sometimes the urgency drowns out any kind of vertical, God-directed dimension. And so Mockingbird, the verticality is what people respond to. The grace is what they respond to. The honesty about human nature. And so what are we looking at? I mean, I'm trying to write a new book called The Big Relief, and it's about grace as the most urgent contribution that Christianity has to make to the world. And so I'm surveying all the pressures that we live under. The pressure to be somebody, the pressure to belong, the pressure to keep up, the pressure to please, the pressure to deserve, to earn, to perform. These are the kind of pressures I feel like all of us live under. And I think that the Christian faith, God in Jesus, has something very specific and beautiful and of great relief to say. And it has to do with grace.
I'd love for our listeners to know you all have a conference coming up, I think, this spring.
Yes, we have a conference coming up April 25th to the 27th. It's in New York City at Calvary St. George's Episcopal Church downtown. One of the speakers is Andy Root, who I think very highly of out of Luther Seminary. The theme for the conference is nothing to lose. I think that there's a tremendous amount of anxiety around diminishing relevance or church decline. My sense is that there's nothing that will be lost that can be lost. And the gospel is a word of assurance, a word of hope, a word of grace. And no one gets that better than he does. But we've also invited Megan O'Giblin, who's one of the, I think, the smartest writers, not a Christian, writes about technology for Wired. She's unbelievable. She's going to be speaking. There's a Kobe Campbell is a therapist who deals with trauma, and she's got a Christian background. She's fabulous. All sorts of people coming. Andy Squires, if people know that name, he's a musician of Instagram, the best Instagram presence I know of. So we're just trying to do whatever we can to amplify the gospel of grace in a world that I think is just full of despair and buckling under the weight of its own expectation.
I wanted to go back to something you mentioned a moment ago, which has everything to do with the work that Mockingbird is doing. It's just the pressures that people feel. I'm thinking especially about the pressures that my clergy colleagues feel, the pastors feel around grace, because I think what I see in a lot of cases is it's all grace until we have to walk into a room and start performing again, even into the sanctuary, the board meeting. And that tension, I think, is unrelenting in a lot of cases. So I think about the type of conversation you're having, and I have a lot of colleagues who say yes and amen, but man, I've got to go have this conversation with these people about the budget tomorrow, and they're going to want to know about the 14 programs that aren't going as well as they're supposed to, and the donor who left the church and didn't leave a check. And, you know, where does that land with you? I'm sure you've thought about this. Oh, I mean, what's your word of grace to our sisters and brothers in those roles?
Yeah, I think it's a sad reality or irony that the higher you move in Christian circles or the sort of closer into the center you get, the less grace there is for you. And I think that's a deep dissonance that needs to be addressed. So on the one hand, I think that I know that there's the reality of needing to feed your family and that the church needs a new roof and that certain bills need to be paid. And I hope that we can, at our best, we can separate those things out from pastoring, you know, like, listen, your standing before God isn't in jeopardy, but certainly your ability to keep your head dry during a service might be. But I think this is why people leave the pastorate, why they leave ministry, is that they get so, you know, ground down by the law and the pressure to increase giving, to increase your Sunday attendance, to buck all the trends. And meanwhile, you have the pressures of acceleration that are just nonstop, whether that's inflation, whether that's kids' sports taking people away from Sunday morning. I just feel enormous amounts of compassion and empathy. But I also know that yelling at people to be there, to give more, to pray more, to show up more, it can work maybe for about a couple months at the most. Then it will empty your pews and you'll start to hate the people that are actually there. So my sense is that grace is our only answer when it comes to these realities. The other is just going to make things deteriorate faster.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're writing about this and calling it The Big Relief, because I am increasingly and more frequently convinced that when in doubt, I just need to go back to grace with my colleagues. We just need to keep returning to this theme and reevaluating and reflecting on it. What comes to mind when you're describing all those pressures and that sort of climbing the church ladder or moving closer to the center? I was thinking about this the other day, contrasting two pastors that I was seeing in my life. One who seems to have figured out how to climb that ladder and has branded themselves in ways very gifted and has some really wonderful commitments and heart in the right place. But I find myself increasingly concerned for them and their relationship to grace. I kind of see this sort of iterative, vicious cycle of performing and the addiction that comes to that and where this might land them in the end. Mm-hmm. And contrasting that with a close friend of mine who is in a rural area in South Georgia, who's just sort of grinding away in very simple ways, who's one of the best preachers I know at a church of like 70 people. And I thought, actually, that's the grace I want to be closer to. That's a grace that's going to struggle to pay the bills sometimes. But I see that tension. And of course, in the scriptures, this keeps coming up over and over and over again. This is not like a new idea, right? I mean, you read through Proverbs and this sort of warning comes up over and over again. This, thinking back in Genesis, this temptation to build a name for ourselves. We don't want to call it that, but we really are. We're building a tower that is going to crumble. That's what comes to mind when you describe all of that. And it does just make me think that we need to keep coming back to this theme of grace. And I wonder about the best ways to do that.
Gosh, the cult of personal branding that a lot of clergy feel cornered into. Mm-hmm. I certainly know as a person who's written a couple books, like it used to be you'd write the book, you'd hand it in, and someone asked you to speak, then maybe you'd speak. But now you have to also become an advertiser and a self-promoter, and you have to do all this song and dance show. And like, you kind of have to if you want people to read what you're going to do. And the same thing applies to preachers. You know, they have to have something on Instagram and clips from their sermons and stuff like that. So I agree 100%. I can think right now of a pastor in a small town in Michigan who I think is just, he read a bunch of Wendell Berry and decided to like put his money where his mouth is and kind of went out there. And you hang out and you're just like, there's something right about this. There's something holy about it. And here I am in a type A blue state culture setting where everyone's miserable, basically. And at our church, at least, and that's our context, we're seeing a hunger for something that's different. For Sunday morning, I remember someone saying, it's the only time I get to just sit back and receive the silences in the liturgy, the message of God's grace for you, you specifically, not just the people out there. I still see that as having tremendous potency. And I don't think the old form of ministry is necessarily broken. I think sometimes we've lost confidence in, Andrew Root would talk about this, and sort of a living God who can do that we cannot and invites us to cast our cares on him. So I don't have a best practices except for I think that if you're preaching exhortation and homework or project Christianity, people have enough projects right now and we're drowning in projects and it would be nice if church was the oasis from acceleration.
You've actually given me an idea of a best practice. As we're talking, I'm thinking, you know, I've never quite put it this way before, but I think the Ministry Collaborative, we do a lot of different things, but the main thing we really do is to try to create kind of healthy, life-giving, very diverse communities of clergy and lay leaders. And I hadn't really put it that way before, but I think one of the values in that type of experience is just being close to somebody, close to people who can help you revisit this more frequently. And so my word of advice to my colleagues out there is find the person in your life who you think kind of gets this and lives it and models it and just start hanging out with them. Just start going to hang out with the person who's just sort of grinding along and finding joy in it, who just is a person who's not overdoing it, is not trying to get you to do another project, and who just wants to remind you of the gospel in simple ways. In a culture that is obviously and increasingly isolated and atomistic and fragmented, that may be the best thing we can do for ourselves is just be around people who model and exhibit this grace.
I think it's countercultural. I don't know if you've been seeing all these statistics about people no longer socializing in the same way. Like,
right.
We joke about, let's just Netflix and chill, but it's like, that's really become the thing. And even there aren't teenage parties and there's not dinner parties and like all of this stuff. It's like, what if church becomes one of the only places where you can be confronted with non-family members? For some people who've got terrible families, that's a really exciting thing. Mm-hmm. For some people who've got great families, that's a place where you could be of service. And, you know, we're always happier to the extent that we're of service to other people. The science bears that out, as of course does the Bible. But I see lots of reasons for hope in a world that's atomized for Christians that can breathe grace into one another's lives.
Yeah, and I have to say too, I see kind of throughout our network of pastors and congregations, people are frequently asking myself and others on our team, like, what's working? They kind of want to know, like, what do we do? And actually, one of my responses to that is, I think the congregations that are healthy and kind of see a way forward are the ones that, along the lines of what you just said, they're just creating spaces for people to be together without an agenda. Mm. Creating spaces for people to be together around a simple object or a text or just, I know that, for example, in my case, my Friday morning Bible study group is, I had to miss it 1 week recently, and I was shocked at how devastated I felt that day that I had to miss it that week. Just to have a simple space just to be with people you trust. And like you said, what a prophetic countercultural thing it is to just hang out. Which I know sounds crazy, but it's not. It's the data. It just says no one hangs out anymore.
Have fun, too. I think churches can be places where fun is had, like you know, the pie in the face kind of fun. I think that that's youth groups at their best. Youth groups at their worst are highly leveraged situations. At their best, they're places where it's not another tryout. Mm. It's not another performance. It's a place where people do human hungry hippo. And like that's a play of that variety. If you could do that in the context of God, I mean, what a wonderful thing to do.
David, thanks so much for Human Hungry Hippo and for this wide-ranging conversation about God's lavish love and grace for us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
a project of the Macedonian Ministry Foundation.
The Ministry Collaborative nurtures a national network
of pastors and congregations
committed to faithful,
creative,
and courageous engagement in their communities.
Our producer is Marthane Sanders.
To find out more about our work of cultivating leadership that makes a difference
in congregations and communities,
visit our website
at www.ministrycollaborative.org.